Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start the podcast, I say it every week, if you are not subscribed to this, I'd love it if you did. Or if you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, hit subscribe, hit the notification button. I love it if you do that. It's the only thing I ever would ask you to do. Give us some reviews and stuff. And it just means that we can help grow this, the guests can get bigger, and we can kind of give you guys some more interesting stories and some more education and insight to what we call the music industry. This week on the podcast, the one and only Joel Corry. I've known Joel from, I think we worked out on the podcast since 2017. And it's been amazing to see his career go from where I met him to where it is now, to being one of the biggest selling dance artists in the world. His music has just reached heights that people dream of, and he's gone from releasing records. Well, his first five records went top 10 UK chart, which is unbelievable. His record with MNEK is at 1.1 billion streams on Spotify. Absolutely amazing. It's doing crazy, selling mad tickets all around the world. And he's also one of the nicest guys in the industry. Works so, so hard. So I'll stop rambling on. Without further ado, Joel Corry. And we're live, Mr. Joel Corry. What's cooking?
What's
Mr.
Up,
good, Mr. Good Looking. How's it going?
Yeah, all good, thanks. I just landed back from Thailand, actually. So I've had a nice few days away in the sun. It's been a nice little break to have in January as well.
Mate, I swear you're always tanned. Always fucking tanned.
I've been on the beach, bro. I've been on the beach all week, so...
Oh man, how's life?
Yeah, life's good. You know, like start of the year now, kicking off 2024, excited for the year ahead. Like last year was a lot, a really great year for me. So I'm just like ready now after like a little few weeks off from touring just to attack this year and smash it.
Do you try and take like regular time off?
I'm really bad at it, to be honest with you. Like it's something that, like my mum always says to me, like you need to have like a few days here and there. Even my management always like, let's just block out a few days in the diary here and there. But I'm like a proper workaholic, and I feel like to have a little break, I've really got to earn that break, and I just never let myself do it. What I tend to do though is like if I have a DJ set somewhere, and I get to have like a day either side to chill, that's when I'll do that, and that's kind of how I manage it.
It's weird how a lot of us are like this. Where like, well, I can only really talk about myself, but like, I know you're like it. And I know a few friends are exactly the same, where it's like, although we're working really fucking hard, if we take a day off, we feel lazy.
Yeah, totally. Like when I have a day off, I actually don't know what to do with myself.
Exactly.
I almost feel guilty. Like,
yeah.
But you know, like on the flip side of that, I know how lucky I am to do this job and to travel and to be able to say that I can just work hard on something that I love so much. Not a lot of people can say that. So I always remind myself that as well.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because we have the best jobs in the world. We work harder than most. And I'm just saying that, like, we generally do. I think, I don't know about you, but for me, is that always that constant, like, if I don't work today or if I take a day off, like, I'm going to lose the opportunity to carry on doing this. Do you ever get that?
100%. And that's kind of what I meant by I almost feel guilty if I take time off. Because I think, like, with this career, like, there's not really like a separation between work and like, I finished work now. It's kind of all day long. You know, there's always some messages to get back to, some emails to get back to, music to work on, DJ sets to prep. There's always something you could be proactively doing. So when you do like try and take the time away from it, there's stuff always playing on your mind. Like, I could be doing this, I could be doing that. So it's difficult to properly ever take a break.
It's really tough, isn't it? It's really, really strange. You've always been in the same mindset as well. I've known you, trying to work out how long I've known you for, and I'm actually going back to the, I'm going back from when we first, where am I? I'm on your Spotify right now, and I'm going like back to the, like, the
just
beginning. Was that the first one that we did?
But we was like, I was coming down and working with you, building up to that. So I was like 2017. I've got a feeling it was 17.
I think it was 17.
Yeah.
Because we did that hurt.
Yeah.
Feel this. Yeah, 2017. Fucking hell, man.
Was that the sofa that I was sleeping on behind you?
It literally is.
I recognize the cushions.
I was talking to Charlie T just a minute ago, and we were talking about you, and I was like, yeah, you actually slept on that sofa, which is random. But ever since I've known you since 2017, you've always just been hustling so hard, whether it's in your fitness days when you were doing like bodybuilding stuff, or when, because whilst you were coming down here, you were touring as like, you were doing a lot of the, like, the more commercial kind of clubs and the rounds around England. And were you doing Mallorca as well then?
Yeah, so
I think you had a residency at the time, didn't you then?
Yeah, I had my residencies in like Zante and Malia and Magaluf, and like you said, I was like slamming the sort of UK high street club circuit non-stop.
Yeah, you were slamming it. You were doing like 3-4 nights a week.
I
never forget that. And like, I think it's like, it's really easy, and I kind of want to go into deeper talks about it, because obviously where you began to where you're at now is very different, and kind of, I think it's very easy for people to say like, oh, like, you were on a TV show, if you know what I mean, you had that kind of that start into the industry and it made it easy for you and everything. Like, it's utter bullshit. Like, I've literally, like, you're one of the hardest working people I've known in the industry. That's like, you came into the studio and with me, and you didn't know exactly what you wanted, but you knew that you wanted to be one of the biggest artists in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's now 2024 and you're one of the biggest artists in the world. But like, I kind of really want to like go into that and kind of like look more in depth at that. Cause I think it's very, especially in the world that you're in, which is in like the more commercial house world, right? Like, you're literally having number one records. And it's very easy for people that aren't in the industry that kind of listen to your music, they're like, oh, like, Joel blew up overnight. Joel didn't blow up overnight. Like, no one blows up overnight. You and I know this in the industry. But I kind of want to talk about like the working years of when you like had to work to fucking get to where you're at, and how that was, and kind of where did all of that come from, really?
Yeah, I mean, well, I started DJing. I've been DJing since I was 13 years old. It was always my hobby growing up as a teenager. you know, I was Joel the DJ at school. I started my own mobile disco company when I was a teenager, and I was doing people's weddings and birthdays, bar mitzvahs, nans, 60ths, whatever, whatever gig that was available. Like I was there, and you know, then I got onto sort of high street residencies in my early 20s, DJing around London as a resident club DJ. You know, I was the first person in the club, starting the music at 9 o'clock, you know, all the way to the end of the night, 3 a.m. And those years doing that really were actually crucial for me when I look back now, is just getting the experience to play to like a wide variety of people on a dance floor, and having to like get those DJ sets prepared with different genres of music. And I'm really glad that I came up that way through the club circuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always just had that dream of like, how can I take it to the next level? And I was looking at other DJs and artists that were in the charts and touring the world and festivals. And obviously, you know, they had music out and had hit records and building their brands. And I just really, really had this like burning desire to follow that path. And in the meantime, when I was doing my club sets, I looked at that as a way of just promoting myself. So if I could get my face on, you know, any flyer, any club flyer, any Facebook page, for me, that was just an opportunity to play in front of people, to get my name out there, you know, pushing my SoundCloud mixes, handing out CDs on a dance floor after sets. And at the same time, focusing on production and starting to put music out, and just doing that for years and years, basically. And then obviously the TV stuff happened, which definitely gave me a platform. So when I was doing my club sets and residencies, it upped that level. So I started then doing my sort of guest DJ sets around the country off the back of the exposure.
Yeah.
And again.
Is that when you felt like things changed a little bit more, or was there a change and then a dip?
Yeah, there was definitely a change at that point. When the TV thing happened, it allowed me to tour around the country rather than just playing my residencies locals around London. And you know, where I was the resident DJ, I was now going into the clubs as like the guest DJ and playing an hour and a half, 2 hours, rather than, you know, the whole night. And at the same time, you know, it built my social media following, so I was able to promote myself, promote my mixes, promote the music that I was releasing to a wide audience. And so I definitely look at that, I used that as an advantage to help with the exposure that I got, to help just promote myself basically and start building my brand. But you know, it wasn't all positive stuff, because there is like a stigma that comes with doing that TV stuff, especially in the music industry. And that was always a challenge for me that I had to overcome. But I actually, it gave me motivation to like work harder and kind of like prove people wrong, sort of thing. And I knew that if I could just get the music right, I felt like I could take it further. And that's when I just was like focusing so much on the music in the studio, putting records out, learning the music industry as well, you know, going through different record deals and, you know, all the good stuff and bad stuff that comes with that. And
I never forget those conversations we had about that first deal you signed.
Yeah. Oh, it's all a learning experience. I honestly think like when I speak to any artist, everyone's gone through that stuff. Dude. You kind of have to, you have to learn it. You know yourself, bro, like you kind of have to go through that, and everyone does. And every time you go through one of those experiences, you learn something and you grow and get stronger.
I think it's really interesting now, because I think what we're seeing now is, I totally agree with you, and I think it's so important that you go through that, because I think you just learn more about the industry, and I think by the time you get to the level of where you or I are at, we know a lot more about the industry. However, the thing that really scares me nowadays is the artists that are taking on almost as like projects. And as much as I really respect it as well, like, it's scary to me. Because I work with somebody that's kind of in that same situation, and to the point where they have a manager before they even have a record deal out. They have a record out. They have a PR before they even have music out. They have like agents before they even have gigs, if you know what I mean. And it's really interesting to see, like, I'm working with somebody at this moment in time, and they had their first release out last on Friday, and they had like front cover Amazon playlist.
Mm-hmm.
They had like New Music Friday. They had dance stuff on Spotify. They had like Beatport number like 20 going mm-hmm. in, and you're like, all these things like on the first day of your career, realistically, yeah. the first day. Could you imagine that now? It would just be like crazy to think that like somebody, yes, they still have to put work in, right? Like everyone yeah. has, everyone has put work in at some point, whether it's to get that manager, whether it's to get that team, whether it's to write records, whatever. But like that first day you release records and that's the success that it has. And
yeah.
the team around you, and you don't have to go through all that shit. I don't know. There's like,
I know what you mean. It sets the bar really yeah. high from day
really
one.
Really high.
And then I guess you kind of don't experience all the grind to get those moments.
Yeah.
So when you get them, you might not appreciate the other side of it.
Yeah.
I guess. But yeah, I mean, like you said, like management and stuff. I actually was kind of self-managed and did everything myself until I actually had my first breakthrough yeah. track, which was Sorry.
Yeah.
And at that point, even when that first came out, I was still self-managed. And eventually I was like, okay, now I need to like find a team and get the team in place. So I kind of did it that way around.
I think you did it the way that it should be done, if I'm honest, to a certain extent, especially when but again, it goes back to your work ethic, right? Like you were working so hard and you knew exactly what the goal was at the end of the day, and you knew what you needed to do. Like when we were writing records together, like we had the conversation multiple times, is like you wanted to write more commercial records. You wanted to write records that reached out to the masses, and I couldn't do that at that time. And like it wasn't really my place to even try and do that at that time. And it was time for like you to go and write them yourself and work with a team that can help you write them. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, like you knowing that goal is so important to like yeah. know exactly what you want as an artist. And I kind of want to go through the process of like, how did that even start to get in your head? Like what was that?
Yeah, it's a really good point. Like I was very, very clear in my mind and focused of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go in industry. Laser focused, almost obsessed. I would
yeah.
wake up in the morning, like my brain just buzzing with it till the moment I went to bed at night. I wanted it so, so badly. And I think that whatever that was inside me, I'm so lucky that I had that. You know, I'm so glad and grateful that I had that inside me to keep pushing and pushing and pushing and like never, ever taking no for an answer.
Yeah.
And even like I mentioned earlier, sort of like some of maybe the challenges I did face because of the way I came through, it was that constant thing inside of me driving to be like, no, you can do it. Like you can prove everyone wrong. You can prove yourself. You can do this. And where did it come from? Oh, God. It's hard to like say exactly where it came from. But I've always been a very like driven person since I was younger, even going back to when I was a teenager and doing my mobile DJ business. And,
yeah.
you know, I was like 15, 16 years old and just thinking about like gigs and, you know, bookings and earning money from it and promoting myself and getting my name out there. So I was even doing it all the way back then. I'm 35 this year.
Yeah.
And I've still got it going inside me. And I've had that since I was younger. I'm not too sure where it came from. But obviously there's a core love of DJing inside of me as well. Like as I said, it was my number one hobby growing up. When I got home from school, all I was doing was DJing, you know, recording pirate radio mix shows every night, you know, DJ EZ on Kiss and all that sort of thing. And obviously different era. I sound really old right now. but, you know, I grew up DJing vinyl as well. So I was part of that culture of
yeah.
every weekend with my pocket money going to the record shop, hunting for vinyl. You know, I played a lot of garage music when I grew up and I had a real love for actual DJing.
Yeah.
So I think that on top of a drive inside of me to be successful are the two things. So that core love of DJing and music and that drive of wanting to, you know, take this as far as I can go, try and reach my potential and get my name out there. Those two things combined is always been inside me since I was a teenager.
It's amazing, man. And now looking at Sorry, which came out 2019.
Yeah.
175 million streams.
That's mad. And it's so funny. Sorry, because I just said, like, I grew up in garage and playing vinyl. Sorry, the original by Monsterboy and Denzi was one of the first vinyl I ever brought when I was younger. And it was like my favorite garage tune growing up. So it's that one's really special to me because I love the original so much. And you know, my version of it, you know, obviously did really well and connected with so many people. So it's that one is and it was my first ever hit record. So definitely has a place in my heart, that one.
So talking about hit records, you've had multiple, but I wanted to stick on that. Sorry. At what point did you notice a change in your career from like being the like guest appearance in Oceanas and Prisms and all of that around the Britain and kind of being known for like who you were at that time to then going, oh shit, Joel Corry is actually like DJ producer writing big records now and releasing big records. Like, did you notice a change straight away from that Sorry record, or was it when Lonely came out or something like that where it was like...
Yeah. Yeah, good question. So in 2019, the summer of Sorry is what I call it. I was, you know, I'd released Sorry in April and I'd released it on Perfect Havoc, who are independent label.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were hustling at the time. I had a residency on Kiss FM as well. So, you know, all my DJ friends, I was like, you know, please give this one a spin on your mix show, and, you know, sending it to everyone that I could and just pushing and, you know, trying to get favors of people for little spins of the record and trying to get it out there. And it wasn't actually until June, which is a couple of months later, that it was actually really started bubbling.
Yeah.
And that was the real start of summer. And I'd just headed out to like Zante and Malia for my summer residencies. And I do remember this, like walking down Zante Strip to my club that I had my residency at, and like hearing Sorry getting played on the strip in other venues as I was walking past them. And you got to understand, like, for me, this was such a big thing, because that's the first time that one of my tracks was being played by other DJs, you know. And I'd always been like a resident DJ, so I was always the one playing hit records of other DJs and other Buse and other artists. And suddenly it was my record that was going off more than anything in my sets. And it was just like, obviously, magical feeling. It felt like, oh my God, like, this is what I always wanted to happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was reacting and bubbling and bubbling. And then it started entering the charts. And then I was getting tagged in all these posts from like official charts company on Twitter and all these different stats, and the record label ringing me every day saying, oh my God, like, got added to this playlist. And you could really feel there was an energy behind the record.
Yeah.
And at that point, Atlantic came in to sign the record, to upstream it, you know.
Yeah.
And then when Atlantic came on board, I was like, oh my God, like, I've just got a major record deal here. You know, I'm working with Atlantic Records. And when they got behind it, obviously, you know, they could take the song to the next level. And it just started flying up the main charts, man. And at that point, I was like, I think people started to put, oh, that's Joel. Oh my God, that's Joel's track. You know, that's going off right now. It's like becoming the song of the summer. And then off the back of that, I then got a new agent that started getting me onto some better lineups, some festivals. And I think at that point, you know, towards that summer, everything started to change. But like you just mentioned, I knew that I didn't want to be like a one hit wonder. And what I did next was the most important thing, like the biggest pivotal moment of my career was what I did next. And I had Lonely ready to go, man. I remember walking into Atlantic Records when we were like talking about Sorry and like, you know, meeting the team. And I said, guys, I've got the next one already. And I opened my laptop and I played Lonely and I was like, this is the next record. And that was just as Sorry got signed. But I was prepared. I had the next one ready. And had to wait a lot of time, though, until it came out. But obviously Lonely came out and went top five. And, you know, then I started being booked on like Jax Jones support tour, Sagala support tour. And this had definitely changed from like me just playing at all these high street clubs to now being like an artist on these different tours and playing festivals and headline shows. So yeah, it was definitely in that period of Sorry to Lonely where it changed.
So now Lonely's at 218 million streams, which is on Spotify. That's absolutely wild. I'd actually done a session with Harley like 2 years before in this like tiny studio in London. I can't remember who it was even with.
Oh, really?
I literally cannot remember. She's great.
Yeah, she's amazing.
So 2020, I want to go through chromatically your career, because each kind of time there's another big record, and it's really interesting to do this. So Lonely happened 2020. Obviously 2020 was the year of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect your touring? Obviously we all stop touring. You know what happens. But how do you pivot when you're like, okay, well, I've got the biggest record. Like, Lonely was one of the biggest records during COVID, right? Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the biggest records at the time. But it's COVID, so you can't tour, right? So what do you do?
Right, so at the time, I was on tour with Jax Jones. And this is like January 2020 or February 2020. I had my whole year planned out that year with all these gigs I was going to do, festivals, tours. Like, we'd put together a massive year of touring. And I was totally like, this is it. Done it. Like, dreams come true. I'm going to have a huge year. I've got two tracks that have both gone top 10 and popping. And then obviously, bang, the pandemic happened and all of the touring, like yourself, got cancelled that year. And I was just like, oh no, you know, this kind of like moment I'd been like pushing for and waiting for, it felt like it kind of suddenly got taken away. All those festivals, all those gigs that I was going to be doing, even the tour that I was on with Jax at the time got stopped.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, obviously everyone was going through hard times and much, much harder times than me. But my feelings at that time was obviously just devastation, because all my gigs I'd been excited about being pulled. But I definitely, though, I feel like I turned that period into a positive for myself, because the next record I made was Head and Heart.
I was gonna say, yeah,
and that came out in June, but I was working on it for months and months. I worked on that tune for nearly a year, and I finished it during COVID. And I do just wonder that if I had continued touring and done all those gigs that I had in the diary and gone and smashed 2020 and gone toured like mad off the back of Sorry and Lonely, I do wonder, like, if I had, what would have happened with the next couple of records? Because I feel like having to take a step back and just think about music and not being out on the road and not, you know, because you know what touring, how touring affects you. It's difficult to sometimes have clarity, you know, with so many late nights and so much traveling. But I was in a total like state of like complete focus and concentration on music at that point, because I wasn't touring then. And I could just focus on finishing Head and Heart with M&EK and get it to the, you know, to the place where I felt like it was perfect, and just refine it and refine it and refine it until it was finally ready to release in June. And obviously that record like literally changed my life again. And I
to another level.
To another level. Yeah, because that was like a global hit record. And
it was
like top of the charts across the world, not just in the UK. And
it's done 1.14 billion streams. Like, just to like put that in context, like the amount of artists that have a billion streams is unbelievable. Like, it's such a small percentage. I think it's like 1% of Spotify actually earns a living from their music. So like, if you think 1% of Spotify, and then you've got probably 0.1% of that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Probably not even that, have like one, have records over a billion streams.
It's insane, man.
It's fucking insane.
That song is like, it's like magic, what that song did, and the way it kind of traveled around the world. And during a time as well when people were in lockdown, I feel like that song actually was really good timing, because it definitely gave people a positive uplift, because it is such a positive feeling record. You know, it makes you feel good when you listen to it. It's my record, and even while I hear it for the 10th billionth time that I've heard it, it still puts a smile on my face. You know, it's just one of them records. And I know that if that had come out during a time when the world was open and clubs were going and festivals were going, obviously I would have gone and toured like mad off the back of that tune. And people say to me, are you gutted that you released that record during lockdown? And I actually say, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I look at it a total different way. I get more pleasure of the fact that, you know, that record meant a lot to people and helped people during the time, because I've seen the messages. They're like, that song made me feel good. You know, I put the radio on and I was feeling down, that record really cheered me up. And I get so much more like pleasure out of hearing that than being like, oh yeah, I could have, you know, gone and toured around the world and headlined this and that because of that tune. And I didn't, because nothing was open.
Well, I think also, like, sorry to butt in there, but I also think, like, and this isn't me not being disrespectful about the record, but I think you hit the nail on the head that timing is so key in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think during that time, 2020, June, like the sun, we had the hottest summer in England. Mm-hmm. It was like amazing, the weather during that first lockdown. I remember it's fucking amazing. But like streaming went up. Like mm-hmm. streaming was huge then in comparison to what it is now. And sometimes I think timing is everything, but maybe if you released that record when you were touring and the world was open and everything, maybe it wouldn't have done as well. It would have done well. Let's be honest. It still would have done fucking amazing, but maybe it wouldn't have done that well as it is now. And maybe we'd be having a very different conversation now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is like, it's so easy to look at going, oh, I wish I released it when I was touring. I wish I did this. I wish I did that. Like, mate, I had my biggest record during COVID.
Right,
April 2020.
Yeah.
Well, I think January 2020, I launched my label with You Take Me Higher.
Mm-hmm.
And then April 2020, Hallelujah came out.
Yeah.
And it's like, I technically should have been touring.
Yeah.
Like that record did crazy things for me,
mm-hmm.
but like it didn't. But again, in argument against that, if it wasn't locked down, maybe it wouldn't have done so well.
Yeah. That's the way I look at it. Totally, man. And I think as well for myself, it was good that I was not on because I think I'm the sort of person that would say like yes to every single gig that I get offered as well. That's just the DJ inside of me. Like if I could DJ 8 nights a week, I would.
Mate, right? Same. Same.
So again, I, from my side as well, I actually look back on it. I think it was probably a good thing that I wasn't able to, you know, that I was able just to stay focused on my music that whole summer. And, you know, Head and Heart was such a difficult record to follow up because of how big it was. And I knew that the next thing I had to do after Head and Heart, it had to be great again. And
That was bad, right?
That was bad, man. That was bad.
Which is like, Joel, let's just read this lineup. Joel Corey, Ray, and David Guetta.
Yeah.
Like, Ray, quite possibly one of the best songwriters of our time.
Yeah.
In pop. Like, quite possibly if we go into like what she's done over the years, like Jesus fucking Christ, it's unbelievable. David Guetta doesn't really need any introduction. Like I know the backstory of that. You've told me on the DL, but what's it like getting a call from David Guetta and saying, I'm going to be on the record with you?
Yeah, it was basically that me and David had already started talking to each other because he He was a big fan of Head and Heart, and he remixed it on his Jack Back alias.
Yeah.
And obviously, David Guetta's like an idol of mine. I've been playing this record since I was 13. Like you said, this doesn't need any introduction. It's David Guetta. So I was having like FaceTimes with him and stuff, and I just couldn't believe it. It was like having a friendship with someone that I'd always, you know, been so inspired by and looked up to. And then Ray was somebody that I really obviously wanted to work with so much. And the way it all happened was, I was in a studio session after Head and Heart with a songwriter called Jinjin, who works with Ray a lot.
Yeah.
And Jinjin asked me if I wanted to hear some of Ray's demos. And I was like, obviously, you know, I'd love to. And she played me like 10 different demos. And the third one in was Bed. And I remember, because it was like, okay, that's sick. Next one. And then I heard Bed, and it was the chorus of Bed. And I just went, you know, instantly was like, wow, I love that. And I just thought straight away, that feels like a hit record hook.
Yeah.
And then like went to the next one. I was like, no, go back. That's the one. And that night I like slid into Ray's DMs and was like, I heard this Bed chorus. I just love it. I think it could be so great. I'd really love to work on it and develop it with you. And she replied back, you know, amazing. I would love to do this with you. Let's get in the studio. And then she said that original like chorus she wrote at David Guetta's house in Ibiza. So then I dropped David an email. Obviously we'd been chatting a little bit anyway, and was like, I've heard this Bed chorus. Do you mind if I work on it with Ray? Because in lockdown I was in the UK and obviously he was abroad. So yeah, I just started working on it and with Ray and then hitting David back and forth, letting him know what's going on and keeping him updated. And you know, that was a long process though. I think I started working on that record in like June 2020, but I didn't finish it until like January 2021.
Wow.
Again, it was just that like constant refinement and OCD on all the little details of the record. I mean, I must have driven Ray absolutely nuts, because I was sending her like which version I was doing. At one point she was like, Joel, what is wrong with you? Like,
I've heard this about you.
But do you know,
but
what?
Hey, like that's what it takes, right?
Yeah, but and again, going back to the fact that I wasn't gone on the crazy tours around the world, and I was able just to lock in fully on those records and be totally like consumed by them, it meant that I always got what I believed was the best result at the end. And I was always striving for like perfection. And I feel like that focus and time that I had to put into the records allowed me to get to that. And I've noticed that since I am touring now like a madman and flying around everywhere, I need to try and work on that balance again to make sure I've got enough balance of music time and touring time. It's very difficult to get that balance, man.
It's really hard. And I think what happens that a lot of artists can forget is that although, yes, we're successful, some more than others in a career sense, but like we can get very caught up in the art of DJing and the art of touring around, because that's realistically majority of where we earn our money, right? Maybe not when you're streaming billions.
It's
the case. And I think also the more successful you get more money dangled in front of your eyes, and we're all little boys and girls at the end of the day and going, oh my God, I can't believe I ever got an offer for that much money. If you know what I mean. And it's like, it's very easy to get caught up in that. And I think it's very easy for artists to forget what got them to that point, and that's the music.
Yeah.
And it's the art. And I think it's very easy to coast as an artist when you've got to a certain level, right? You could literally, you could probably not release music for the next 2-3 years and still be the Joel Corry of what you are now and earn just as much money and just coast along in where you're at. But then again, I question myself, is like, is that really what makes you happy?
Yeah. It's so interesting to hear you say that, because these are the thoughts that go around in my head all the time. And I've realized that I what makes me happy is making amazing records
yeah,
that connect with people, that travel, that are hugely successful. That's actually what makes me happy. And it's a lesson that I've learned myself, that I need to, like I said, regain that balance a bit more of touring to music, where I can focus even more again on the music and deliver what I feel I can deliver, and not be, you know, almost affected too much by the heavy touring schedule.
Yeah.
Because I miss having more time on the music, and that is what makes me actually happy. And I've realized that.
It's interesting because so 2022, I decided I was getting to the point where I was like really fed up with writing club records. Like I'd just done COVID. I'd written so much music during COVID. I think like 2020, I wrote 80 records. It's just like stupid. And then same in 2021. And then obviously we got back to it, and coming to the end of 2021, I was like, I'm over writing club records. Like I need something else in my life. I need to really like start writing something different. And 2022 was, I said to my manager, like, April, I'm carving out some time throughout the whole of the year to write an album. And that's not just going to be club records. It's like an actual album. And for me, the whole of last year, so I gave myself a year. I said, so April 2022 to April 2023, I'm going to have a complete album. And I did it. And then took a while to start. It's coming out this year. But for me, it's really strange, because usually coming into a new year, 2024, I'd have 20 club records ready to play. But because I've just been working on an album, I've not written any club records for myself. I've written for other people. I've not written any club records for myself, which is weird, because I then go to my DJ sets and I'm like, fuck, you're lazy. Like, I forget that I wrote like 50, 60 records for the album. And it's a whole different project. But it goes back to what you were saying. The feeling of having to write music and to like listen to that music and go, oh shit, I fucking love this process. Mm-hmm. And I love that, waking up in the morning going, I'm going in the studio today and I don't know what the fuck's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. But even if it's not a good day in the studio, it's one step closer to having a fucking amazing day in the studio. And maybe that comes out with the fucking biggest hit record in the world, or maybe it comes out with something that I love that no one else likes.
Yeah.
Don't give a fuck. It's just that process, right?
Yeah. And like, that's this year, February, I've taken February basically off touring just to be back in the studio. And this is something that I haven't done enough of in the last couple of years, because the touring's been so heavy. And I've had to like kind of squeeze in the studio stuff in between touring, which has made it really stressful and not as enjoyable. And, you know, maybe I feel like I could have got better results if I prioritized things differently. Like last year I released my album, and bringing that together during a time where I was doing so many gigs.
Yeah.
The stress, the sleepless nights, the nonstop sort of like, you know, stressing over stuff, it almost made the process unenjoyable. And of course, like, we want to earn money. And like you said, the DJ inside of us wants to play all the different gigs, and you get all the offers and you're like, want to say yes to everything. But I've learned that that balance needs to be so much better for myself this year. Otherwise, you just don't enjoy it.
So this episode comes out February the 23rd. And so you would have had your month off. So hopefully you've written some hit records during this month. But if, like, note on that, I have all of February off as well. So we should definitely get in the
studio. Yeah, 100%. I'd love to get me back on that couch.
get sleeping. You're not an A-class DJ now. You're back on the couch. So I want to, before we get to the album, because I'm coming to the album for you. Out was your next record.
Yep.
Joel Corey, Jax Jones, Charlie XXS, and Sweetie.
Yeah, Sweetie.
Sweetie.
Yeah.
473 million streams. Mental.
And that record is a sample of Stromae, A Laws and Dance, which yeah. I absolutely loved that record. I used to play it when I was younger, and it was a sample that I always wanted to work on. And I actually had that out demo all the way back when I just finished Sorry. So I had that sort of on the hard drive for ages, a very sort of undeveloped version of it. And me and Jax have become really good mates. Obviously, like, I supported him on his tour just before lockdown. And we were like really good mates, wanted to work on music together. And we were just chatting about tracks during lockdown and sending each other different ideas. And I sent him that out demo. I was like, mate, do you know this sample? And he straight away was like, I love this track so much. And I was like, oh my God, this is the one. We should do this together. You know, it just felt right. Yeah. Like it kind of lived in both of our worlds as well. And I love the concept of the whole out concept as well, kind of fitted perfect with just coming out of lockdown.
So good.
It was like, all right, this is the tune that everyone's going to go back out. So it kind of worked for the time as well. You know, it was that record to get everyone back on the dance floor. And you know, when Charlie XCX jumped on it and Sweetie and it just became like a really fun record with us all together. And it came out, you know, that was After Bed then, and again straight into the top 10 in like week two or three. So it was like, that track was like a rocket, man. We literally released it and it just went straight away.
It's amazing how records do that, right? And how, like you were saying, like Sorry at the beginning was like a slow burn.
Oh, that was such a slow burner. I'd already was about to release another record because I was actually getting Lonely teed up to release. I just thought, I didn't think Sorry was working.
Yeah.
But it was such a slow burner. But then, yeah, compared obviously to other records that just go straight
just,
in.
Just do it. It's amazing. And the thing is that I really respect the more commercial world, like the world that you're in, because they actually work records. Record labels actually work them. Whereas in the more underground world, I feel like if your record doesn't, or it's 100% the case, if your record isn't connecting within the first couple of weeks, it gets forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because obviously in the commercial world, like, it takes longer for these records to connect. It's harder to get radio. It's harder to get like the big playlist. But because there's way more invested in it, these records have to be worked for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that the underground or the less commercial side of the industry can really learn from the record labels, the majors, realistically, because I think it's a strict business for them. It is, we release music.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they do. Whereas I think more in the underground world, it's like it's more so a brand for the artist,
yeah,
than about releasing records in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting concept.
Yeah, there's a lot to like dive into with it. I feel as well, obviously, it's like two different approaches, because with the underground world, you're really relying on like DJ support as well.
Massively.
To gain that buzz around those records. More now than ever, especially with TikTok and everything. Some of these club records are like the biggest records just off DJs spinning them and clips of it going around, and suddenly other DJs jump on it and want to play it. And and it's like with the sort of major label and the commercial approach, they will get behind a record, but if it doesn't react, they will step away from it. They will step away. And I do think with a major label, there's obviously like a lot of positives, but the negatives is there's so much pressure on that record that it needs to work.
100%. 100%. How do you cope with that pressure?
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. Like, it doesn't get easier either. It's really difficult, mate, to be honest, bro. You know, especially when there's so many people involved, as in like, you know, your radio team, the label team, the other artists that you're collaborating with, it does build up this huge amount of pressure of like, this record has to be a hit. And I feel like in today's world, things are becoming so much harder to get records to connect without having some sort of luck on a viral aspect. So it's even harder now to get them away. So there's an extreme amount of pressure. And how do you deal with it? I just think you've got to believe that you've done your part to the best of your ability. And you know, you love what you've done. You've worked as hard as you can. And you just got to keep reminding yourself that it's kind of, once you've put it out there, it's, you kind of not got that much control anymore. And what will be will be.
So, I agree with you. But I think also, as artists, although we shouldn't, especially if you listen to Rick Rubin, like, he's like the guru of like no expectations, but like, I'd be lying if I said I didn't have expectations when I release a record. If for me to say that I don't have a single expectation when I release a record is utter bullshit. What is a failure to you with a record? Because your failure is going to be way...
Yeah.
Your failure is going to be somebody else's hit record, right?
Yeah.
Purely because you've had records streaming a billion, half a bill, like hundreds of millions, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? How do you record success of your records? And is that streams? Is that radio plays? What is that?
Yeah, I think my outlook on it has changed a little bit over the last couple of years, but definitely off the back of like, once I had like five top 10 records in a row, such like a crazy roll to go on.
It's mad.
After that, it was like anything that doesn't go top 10 in the charts, for me, it was painful.
Yeah.
It hurt, bro. Like, it really, and the way I am as well, I'm very competitive, you know, like, and again, it goes back to that sort of like obsessive sort of like, mindset and strive for perfection. When something doesn't come off in my head, it really, really hurts. But I've learned to deal with that. So back then it would be like, if this didn't go top 10, like, this is a fail. But then I started to realize that there's so much more to it than just getting a top 10, you know, for example, like, I did a record with Tom Grennan called Lionheart, right?
Yeah.
And that record like peaked at 17 or 18 in the chart. But that record, I know, meant a lot to a lot of people and like had a very like connected broadly and really like, as I said, connected with people and had a really positive effect on people. And when I go around and play that record, like, there's such a huge reaction and there's, and I think like this is so much more than just like a chart record. Like, this is a song that people really love, and we did something like special together on this. So I kind of think that, you know, I started to realize that, you know, if it doesn't go top 10, it isn't a failure at all.
Yeah.
That's crazy thinking. But that's what my mindset was like a few years ago. What do I think a failure is now? Oh, what would I say a failure is? I honestly don't look at it that way anymore. I really don't, bro. I don't look at anything now. As long as I believe that I did the best I could at the time, I don't look at any sort of like chart positions as a failure, because I just think so difficult now to judge what is gonna move in the charts, because of the way the industry is now, though, and there's so many moving parts in play, and it's kind of, it's like a lottery now, isn't it?
Mate, it's changed so much in the last year.
Yeah, like, it really has.
Just a year, like, it's changed, and especially from 2020, it's like, well, like, the streaming world is worlds apart from what it was.
Yeah.
The amount of people listening has changed completely. How people listen has changed. Like, how quickly things change as well. I was in the studio the other day and I was watching some crazy person made like a YouTube video of all of Max Martin's hits. Mm-hmm. And it was like a chart, a moving chart of like how long records stayed in the top 10 for. And it was just like going up and down. And like back in the like 90s, early 2000s, there'd be records that would be in the top 10 for months.
Yeah.
Right. And now it's like, but they started low. Okay. So it almost did what Sorry did for you.
Yeah.
Right. So it started low and it would slowly go up, stay at the top, be in the top 10 for a few weeks, slowly drop down. Whereas all of his modern day stuff starts at number 10.
Yeah.
May go up and then just fucking drops out.
Yeah.
Unless it's been like a viral hit on TikTok, which was one of them. It was a weekend record that was, I can't remember which record it was. Let me pull it up. It was the weekend. I can't remember. Blinded Lights.
Mm-hmm.
It was that fucking house done 4 billion streams. That is mental. But because that was a viral hit on TikTok, that stayed at like number one in the top in the US charts for like 2 months, which is crazy. But then it dropped off. But like what I'm seeing is that things start high and drop off straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the we can't even compare times of the industry from 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's changed.
It's changed so much. And like back then, sort of like 2019, 2020, I had like a stone cold sort of formula. And even the way that we ran campaigns, like it was like a slick operation that I'd got down to a T and with my team. But now it's like anyone's game out there. Like some of these records that just pick up momentum on TikTok and, you know, go top 10. It's like, how did that happen? Like, how do you make that happen? And the thing is, you can't. There's no way of like making it happen. There's no real formula about it. It's kind of just some sort of like mysterious magic luck that happens, or timing, or whatever. And nowadays you just, even the record labels don't know, bro. Like no one knows how it happens now.
It's scary, right?
It's scary, and like I think. I know that I'm lucky that I kind of got myself like through the door at a time before all this really had so much influence. I think it's really hard now for an artist to break themselves, to be like consistently having hits.
100%.
Very, very difficult to like, you know, to be on a sort of roll like that. Because this, as I said, there's so many moving parts now and so many different factors in play that need to work for a record to become a hit. And you can't control them or judge them or really have much influence on them. It's just kind of got to be a bit of like that viral luck involved in it.
I agree. It's super hard. And I think it's the same. I also believe it's the same in like the more underground side of things as well. Is like less DJs are playing DJs records. They're all playing their own records.
Mm-hmm.
And the only videos they post is their own records. Like before, it was very much about promoting other people's music and like just a big record that's popping off. Everyone plays it. But like I speak about this a lot with other artists, like in the more underground space. And we haven't had like Ibiza summer hit, like the one record that everyone plays, since like Camel Fat Cola. I don't think there's been one in the like underground scene where that's happened. And it's just a sign of the times. It's a very different time to be an artist.
Yeah. 100%. And anyone that figures it out,
let us know. I want to talk about Another Friday Night, which is your debut album, which came out last year. It happened to be the biggest selling dance music record or dance music album of 2023. How's that, mate?
Oh yeah, it's incredible. You know, I don't think like you know, DJs and sort of commercial dance music artists don't really do albums. It's not that much of a common thing anymore. So, you know, to be honest, like it's a great stat to have, like, you know, the highest selling dance album, but truthfully, there's not a lot of competition because it's not that common anymore. That's the truth. Like, people don't really do them anymore because it's such a singles and streaming market. And my album is predominantly like all my records from the last couple of years, plus all my new music that I made in 2023. So like some people were like, oh, your album's like a greatest hits because it's got, you know, it's got records on it, like, you know, all the way back to Sorry and Lonely. But I just didn't want to leave any of those songs off. It felt weird to like put my first album out without all those records that, you know, which really gave me my break. But yeah, so in that sense, this album's been in the works for 4 or 5 years. And, you know, me and the label were having a lot of conversations of like, should we even do this? But I really personally wanted to do it. I wanted to have that body of work that I could look back on and be like, that was the first chapter of my music career. You know, that was all those records in one body, in one playlist that I could just present. And at the start of the year, I was like, we are doing this. I was like, 2023, this is the year that we are doing it. So we got a plan in place and spent a lot of work and a lot of time and effort to bring that project together. It's not easy bringing an album. No. There's so much behind the scenes work that has to go into it. But it was all worth it. It was difficult doing it during the time when I was touring like crazy as well. Like we said earlier, you know, it was very stressful. But I'm delighted with the result, and you know, I'm just so happy that I've done that. And now I can approach this year with like a fresh, clean slate in my mind and ready to work on new music. And I feel like I've closed that first chapter now.
Yeah, it is almost like a chapter, right? Of like all the Joel Corey hits plus new ones.
Yeah.
And mate, it's fucking done well.
Yeah.
I'm literally looking at it now and you're like, every record on there has done well.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Oh, thanks, man.
The artwork's sick as well. It's like classic 90s boy band look. Yeah. I fucking love it. So good. So good, man. Talking of 2024, I've seen you've just announced Ibiza residency, Ibiza Rocks. Am I right in?
Yeah, it's actually my fourth year doing the Wednesdays there at Ibiza Rocks. And listen, like, you know, I think every DJ always wants to get to Ibiza. I mean, I did, you know, all those years that I was having my residencies in other resorts, you know, the Greek islands and Mallorca and stuff. In my mind, I was always like, one day I just need to get to Ibiza. Cause I was going there as a raver since I was 18. Every year, me and the boys would go to Ibiza. It was like my favorite place in the world. My best memories were always made in Ibiza. And eventually, you know, partnered with Ibiza Rocks to get my night out there, and this is the fourth year of it. So we're building it every single year. It's getting bigger and bigger, and it's a great home for me, and it's been a good home for me for the last few years.
Nice. Yeah, it's Ibiza's an interesting place now. I'm sure you've been going there for years, so you've seen the change. But it's amazing what Ibiza Rocks has done over the years and how it kind of has like evolved into what it is now, and it's like the place in San Antonio to go, right?
Yeah, and you know, it works great for me because it allows me to add like a performance aspect to the event as well. So, you know, all these collaborations I've had with different artists, I'm able to bring them out and perform these songs live, you know, during my DJ set. And I always play like an extended set, 3 hours long, which gives me the opportunity to show what I can do as a DJ. So it's, you know, people come because they, you know, are fans of those radio pop records, but then it gives me the chance to play my more underground stuff that I love and really take the crowd on the journey. And that's why it works great for me. I think it's, and it's also a day party, so I'm in bed by 11 PM.
It's so perfect. I love those parties.
Oh, mate.
I played on New Year's Day. I played Chicago, and it was a day party, and I was like, oh my god, I fucking wish every set was like this.
Yeah. It's nice to get that proper night sleep in, and yeah, it's definitely, as I'm getting older, I'm definitely like valuing those day sets a lot more.
Yeah, I bet, man. How's the fitness going at the moment?
Yeah, fitness is going good. I've actually just about to I'm announcing that I'm joining C4, who cool, are you know, a big sports supplement brand, and I've been working with them for the last year, but we're going official now. And sick. Yeah, so I'm great.
So what are you going to be doing with them?
So I'm going to be basically part of their team now. So I always have used their products since I was a teenager. That's why, to be honest with you, like, I have had offers with other brands over the last few years, but I've waited because I wanted to do it a genuine thing that I actually believe in and felt right. Totally. And, you know, C4 is a brand that I actually love. I'm a huge fan of and use their products. So yeah, just partnering with them means I'm going to be part of their team, doing events with them, obviously promoting their products and telling people about them, letting them know them, making my followers and fans aware of the stuff they put out and what they do, and creating some cool content together.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's been going really well, mate. You know, fitness is a big passion of mine. You know, in my 20s, I took it a lot more seriously and was doing the competitions, which you know all about. You've seen the pictures. Don't Google it. No one Google the pictures, please.
Mate, I remember, I think it was our last session that we did together here. You were about to do a show, like a fitness show, I think in a week's time, and you were literally like starving yourself and you could barely walk, and I was like, dude, that is dedication. But you were like, this is my absolute last time I'm ever doing it.
That's crazy, man. That was all the way back then. I mean, doing those competitions, right, nothing will ever be more physically and mentally challenging for me than that, because that was like 4 months of intense training and dieting, and like you said, going almost to the point where you feel like you're starving.
And you are starving.
You're starving, man. You're in such a calorie deficit, and you've got to push through and kind of get that mental resilience to get through those preparations. And what actually has happened is later in my life now, sort of in this new era of my life in the music industry, the sort of discipline that I had to go through those competitions has helped me so much.
100%
in the music industry, with my touring, with just the dealing with the pressure of everything that's going on. I just think that doing those actual fitness competitions really, really helped me build up that sort of resilience. And I don't want to do one again because it's so grueling. But I'm glad I've done them. And fitness is still a big hobby of mine and a big passion and part of my daily routine.
Well, I think it's part of your career as well. I think it's like you always look fucking amazing. Like it's part of your brand, right?
Yeah. I would say that's true. And it's kind of cool. You know, a lot of people come see me DJ, and after I've set, they'll ask me questions about fitness, which is really nice, man. And hopefully, you know, some of the fitness stuff I've done has inspired people to help them with their fitness journeys, which is the most important thing. And for myself, there's obviously a lot of physical benefits with it, but there's a much, much bigger mental benefit for me for keeping on top of my fitness and my diet. And it really, you know, puts a spring in my step and helps me have that mental clarity when it comes to my DJing and music production.
Yeah, I think it's really key. Like for me, I'm nowhere near at the level of where you are with training, but like I train every day and it's so important for me. It keeps my brain not in the pits, really. Like if I don't train, I get so negative.
Same.
So negative. Yeah. It's an interesting. Would you ever like do more in fitness again?
Well, I think now that I'm kind of working with C4, like there's going to be a lot more fitness related content that I'm going to be working on this year, which is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like now I've got, you know, a team that I can take it to the next level and really like do some cool stuff with. So I'm excited about that. My main focus though is my music and my DJing, and it always will be. And that was always my number one dream and passion. And to sort of keep this going with my music and my DJing, I actually need to work even harder this year and be even more focused. Yeah, yeah. So nothing is going to distract me off that path. But yeah, my fitness is obviously, you know, still a huge thing for me. And I'm looking forward to working with C4, but you know, my DJing and music is always going to be that number one for me.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree. 2024 plans musically, what have we got?
So, I'm in a strange position here where I haven't actually got. I've got club records ready to go. So in February, I'm releasing like 3 club records. But as far as the radio sort of more pop commercial releases, I've got kind of a clean slate right now. And the other thing is, what's nice is I'm not under any pressure to rush a release out because I've just done the album and that's still got like its legs to go on this year. So I'm just going to just go in the studio and have fun, see what feels good, not rush anything out. And when I feel like I've got that killer record, then I'll flick the switch. But I'm under no pressure right now to get to like jump into a big sort of commercial campaign or anything. I can, I'm going to have some fun with some club records that are more Beatport focused, which I've been playing in my DJ sets that I've been waiting to release for a while. And yeah, I guess just see when I feel like I have something that I think is killer and that I love, then it'll be time. But I can honestly say I don't have it right now. I'm just in the studio, going to have some fun and experiment.
Are you still in your major deal?
Yeah. So the album was the end of the first term.
Yeah.
And now we go into the sort of the next
second.
Yeah. The next option with Atlantic. So, you know, I love Atlantic. They've been such a great team for me. They're like my family. So I'm so happy to continue working with them and excited.
It's nice to have that.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear that because so many artists just fucking hate the label that they work with.
Yeah. You hear some horror stories and like, but I am very lucky to have a great team at Atlantic. And like I said, they are literally the family to me. And we've achieved so much as a team. And I'm looking forward to continuing our journey together.
Sick, man. Well, let's wrap this up. Dude, I'm so proud of you, man. It's like from 2017 to now, your career, your life has changed massively. And it's all down to you working really fucking hard. And so, like, keep it up, man. Keep it up. I'm really excited to see what comes out of it.
Oh, thanks so much, bro. Like, you know me from the start, man. So it's always special when we catch up. And I love meeting up with you when I'm on tour as well.
Likewise, man.
And bro, get me back on that sofa. And oi, I miss your cooking as well,
mate.
I remember,
right?
Those meals you used to cook me, bro. That was the best part.
Weren't good for the abs, put it that way. No, mate, have a great year. I'm sure I'll see you soon, but keep in touch and I'll catch you soon.
We'll do, bro. Big love.
Peace. And that is a wrap. Big love to Joel for coming on. Big love to listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Please share it. Please give us a subscribe. Give us some comments and see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.